Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine the state of labor in America with a labor organizer and educator and an historian of American labor. First, we will speak with Les Leopold, who directs the Labor Institute and the Public Health Institute and is a strategic consultant to the Blue-Green Alliance, which brings together trade unions and environmental organizations like the Sierra Club and the United Steelworkers Union. Then, to get a sense of where the labor movement stands today in comparison to its strength and percentage of the workforce that was unionized in previous decades, we will speak with Leon Fink, who edits the journal Labor, Studies in Working Class History of the Americas. We will discuss what might revive the labor movement and restore the American dream as the current recession deepens and jobs, or the lack of them, become grist for the political mill in the upcoming election year. Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us is Les Leopold, who co-founded and directs two nonprofit educational organizations, the Labor Institute and the Public Health Institute. He designs research and educational programs on occupational safety and health, the environment, and economics. He also serves as a strategic consultant to the Blue-Green Alliance, which involves United Steelworkers Unions and the Sierra Club and other unions and environmental organizations. He's the author of The Looting of America, How Wall Street's Game of Fantasy Finance Destroyed Our Jobs, Pensions, and Prosperity, and What We Can Do About It. Welcome to Background Briefing, Les Leopold.
Thank you for having me.
And happy Labor Day to you, Les.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to be happy on this Labor Day if you're interested in labor.
And why is that?
Well, we have the highest unemployment rate since 1937. We've got longest sustained unemployment rate since 1937. We had no job growth for the first time in the post-World War period. It's tough to be a working person in this environment, and unions are suffering even more in a way.
Well, I've talked to labor historians and others who have analyzed the situation, and I've been getting a lot of email from real union guys, the people that are in the trenches, saying, you know, why are you talking to academics who've got tenure and job security? Why don't you talk to people out there on the front line? So give us a flavor of that, Les, because I feel like I've been called out here.
Well, I you need both. You need to know what's going on now, and you need some perspective. But I think this is clearly the worst time for unions since the modern labor movement was formed. I mean, the labor density is now in the private sector is probably falling below 7%, maybe even below 6%. You see public sector workers being attacked from all sides. You have perhaps the biggest problem is you have a defective political strategy and one that it seems impossible almost for labor to rearrange. For 50 years, labor has been counting on the Democratic Party to be the party of jobs. And it no longer is. And, there's some good Democrats who care about these things. But basically, the Democratic Party, I'm going to quote somebody else here, but it's a very good phrase, is trying to be a party both of the predators and the prey. And that doesn't work. What you have, however, is that the labor movement is going to double down once again on the Democratic Party. No matter what happens, no matter how badly they get screwed, they're stuck inside the Democratic Party because the Republicans just seem so much worse, and they can't figure out how to break away politically. And that, I believe, is the biggest crisis that labor unions have ever faced. There's other problems as well, which is in order to have a mass base, it seems to me that unions have to rethink who they are. I think the efforts of some to begin to get green in a hurry is a step in the right direction, because I think we have to speak to the entire person, the entire community, and employment in sustainable green jobs is, I think, what everybody wants, and the sooner unions can speak that language, the better.
Well, you know, that didn't happen when the first piece of legislation that the president managed to get through when he had that honeymoon period when he first came in, of course, was the stimulus bill, And a lot of critics in retrospect, and at the time, as a matter of fact, said it wasn't enough, that he got had and taken by the Republicans, who said that they'd support it if you converted 40% of it to tax breaks as opposed to cash. And of course, not one Republican voted for it. But the main critique in retrospect has been that that shovel ready, by its very nature, was the old economy that had some of that money gone. And I believe some of it did go to green insulation and some research. But of course, sadly, the biggest solar company up here in the United States just went bankrupt or filed for bankruptcy after receiving government loans, which of course the Republicans are going to jump all over. Do you think this White House has shown some leadership or sufficient leadership on this point?
No, and I think the missing factor was that the Democrats and Obama, I assume he's a Democrat, should have made jobs their number one and only goal from the second he came into the White House. See, he accepted the Larry Summers and the Tim Geithner argument that unemployment was going to fall as soon as the banking system was resurrected. So therefore, the bailouts of the financial system, and not being too hard on them, they told him to shut up with his rhetoric about his populist rhetoric, and jobs would be would flow again once money flowed properly through the financial system. Now it's true things could have gotten worse if the financial system didn't get put back together, but it did not trickle down into jobs. So how would it look if you really cared about jobs? What you would do is say, I'm putting people back to work. We have to rebuild America's infrastructure, so we're going to rebuild it, and we're going to subsidize state and local governments indefinitely, so they don't have to lay off any people, and we're going to make them hire more people, and we're going to make the private sector hire more people. We're going to do whatever we can do. We're going to do whatever it takes, not just what we can do, but whatever it takes to put people back to work, and then measure yourself by that standard. Instead, what's happened is they've given up the narrative to the Republicans in a disastrous way. 2 years ago, when you interviewed me, I think it was pretty clear to most Americans that the problem of the economy was too much money in the hands of a few, which turned Wall Street into a casino and turned the stock market in general into a giant casino, the housing market into a giant casino, which crashed. Lack of regulation, too much money in the hands of a few, bad tax policy on the rich, and so on. That it was clearly a Wall Street-induced economic crisis. But now the narrative has changed in a terrible way. Now the narrative is, We're living beyond our means. We have too much debt, and only once we cut enough debt will we be able to get the economy going again. The narrative now is that public sector jobs suck, and the only good jobs are private sector jobs. So let's whittle down the public sector and get the regulations off the private sector so they can grow again. This is an utter fabrication of what happened. It's a total lie, and President Obama maybe couldn't have done all the things I just suggested. But he could have tried, and he could have kept the narrative clear that the problem is Wall Street gambled our economy into the ground, and we have to put people back to work. He could have kept the focus on that. Instead, he drifted into this debt garb. Well, first of all, he lost the Congress because he didn't keep his eye. He went for health care instead of going for jobs. That was a big mistake, I think. He spent his political capital, little that he had, and they're not being kind to him on that front for sure, on health care. And as important as that is, that's a badly compromised piece of legislation. Putting people back to the work always comes first. And he didn't feel that sense of urgency of now. He missed the now. The Republicans came in with their Tea Party people who were furious at this, that, and the other. And people who are unemployed and concerned didn't know where to turn. And they rejected a lot of the Democratic leadership because they didn't see it anymore as a party of jobs. Anyway, my point is this. The narrative has to be about jobs, not about debt. And it has to be about what really crashed the economy. Look, in 6 months, 8 million jobs disappeared when the financial crisis took place. That was not a problem of debt. We didn't have a debt problem then. We didn't have a state and local fiscal crisis problem then. We had it only after those jobs were lost. So focusing on that is the task of the Democratic Party. It's going to be very difficult for them to recapture it. And on some level, I'm not sure Obama truly at a gut level feels it. He doesn't feel it enough, to be convincing. He's going to have to feel it a lot in the next 2 years, or he's going to be out in the street. And we're going to be stuck with these, you know, Republican Neanderthals who are going to talk all about that, and they're going to drive us back to the verge of a Great Depression. That's what their stuff's going to do to us.
Again, I'm speaking with labor organizer Les Leopold, who serves as a strategic consultant to the Blue-Green Alliance, which involves trade unions and environmental organizations such as the United Steelworkers Union and the Sierra Club. He is also the author of The Looting of America, How Wall Street's Game of Fantasy Finance Destroyed Our Jobs, Pensions, and Prosperity, and What We Can Do About It. And in terms of a Labor Day discussion here, Les, obviously one hates to be pessimistic and bleak here. And of course, the statistics make that pretty inescapable. As you mentioned, organized labor is down to about 7 to 6% of the private workforce at the moment. This jobs speech coming up on Thursday had to be rescheduled. Why the White House chose it on the same day that the Republican debate has done nothing but make one question the strategy there at the White House, since they again looked like they've been hosed. What's your expectation? I mean, obviously a speech alone is not going to change the labor landscape.
Well, one way to measure it is if you go to the Blue-Green Alliance website, there's a Jobs 21 platform there about how to create a very detailed description of it that they put together on how to create 10 million jobs. New jobs. He needs something on that scale. And the way to measure him would be, is he going to come up with a plan that can create, you know, 8 or 10 million jobs over the next 3 or 4 years? Or is it going to be piffle, you know, lots of little twist here, a little twist there? He's going to have to be, I don't know what to expect, but he's going to have to show some real outrage. And he's going to have to lead. He's going to have to push. He can't start by compromising. But the problem is, I mean, now we're talking not about Labor Day, but the strategy, the White House strategy is to look reasonable, to keep moving to the center and make the Republicans look unreasonable, and they'll look reasonable and they'll win. But, you know, that's nice game theory. But with, you know, something like 29 million people unemployed or underemployed at the moment, those people don't care about game theory. They don't care about who looks right. They care about getting back to work. So he's got to have to show some real moral outrage. He can do it. The question is whether he will. We'll find out soon enough. But it's in a way, it's pathetic that the Democratic leadership and President Obama have waited this long to talk about to hammer in on a jobs crisis. Why did they talk about debt for the last year? Why bother? Why not be talking about jobs all the time? Why not from the first day you're in office when you have so many jobs disappearing? It's interesting. History can repeat itself. Unfortunately, one part of it's not repeating itself. The part that's repeating itself is that there was actually because Roosevelt was so aggressive in the 1930s when he came into office with job creation programs and public spending, there was a recovery, but they mistook the scale of the recovery. And in 36, 37, they cut back on spending and tried to balance the budget, and sure enough, it's unemployment shot through the roof again. So we haven't learned from that lesson. We're doing it right now. We may be in a recession already. The part that unfortunately is not happening is the labor resurgence that went along in the 1930s. You know, there are some bright spots now. There are some unions that are, you have the California nurses attacking their national union attacking Wall Street and trying to do rallies and take people to the street. And you have a lot of anger on the steelworkers. They want to fight. They want to do something. But until there needs to be sort of a symbiotic attack on jobs coming from the Democratic Party, the president, and the labor movement, and the environmental movement for that matter. Unfortunately, this is the worst Labor Day ever, because things are drifting so quickly to the right. The whole fundamental dialogue is switching to the right. The memory of what caused the crisis is leaving us. We're getting what I call financial amnesia. We're forgetting how we got here, and we're buying this, debt is bad, kind of, government debt is bad, arguing the public sector is bad, and the voices who could do something about it are silent. In fact, they're, you know, giving in. So anybody that has a job right now is listening, you know, we should be thankful. And also we should be thankful there's still some unions around that exist and that are fighting. But there's going to have to be a whole lot more done, especially in the political arena. And at some point, we have to wean ourselves from a strategy that says no matter what Democrat is running, we got to support him. Because the rank and file is not going to buy that. They're going to protest. And we're not giving them an alternative. I don't know what that alternative looks like in our current environment, but the Tea Party just proved to us that you could have a very strong formation inside another party and really make a difference. How come there's not a jobs party inside the Democratic Party that's hammering away on these people that are trying to kiss the butts of Wall Street, that are still refuse? I mean, they still can't. Even when we had Democratic majorities in both houses, we could not pass a simple tax reform that would have hedge fund billionaires pay the same income taxes as everybody else instead of giving them their carried interest maximum 15% around. They make billions of dollars. And we don't have the courage to tax them. The Democrats couldn't pull that off when they controlled both houses. So, you know, people are going to be are looking for leadership, looking for some people, somebody to say it like it is, a party that says it like it is, or a group within a party to say it like it is, and threaten to take them down if they don't come around. And what's going to happen anyway is, as I said just a second ago, I think the rank and file, some will go along with the leadership and support the Democrats no matter what, but a lot are going to rebel. And since they don't have a choice, the Republicans are going to be the benefit of that rebellion, or they're going to stay home. And that's a sad state of affairs. I'd like to say something really positive. You know, I could give you all the rah-rah stuff about, you know, there have been some great strikes that have been fought, and there have been some, you know, labor board victories, and there have been some nice coalitions that are forming between labor and environment, but we have so far to go because when the whole glacial we're having like a right-wing continental drift that's accelerating. It's just moving, like an ice floe, moving to the right, to the right, to the right. And the whole dialogue is moving to the right. That is more dangerous than anything else that's going on. I don't see anything to stop it right now.
Well, there's a lot of reasons for that, I imagine. Again, I'm speaking with labor organizer Les Leopold. Clearly, the foxification of news, the fact that there's no progressive alternative news network in this country, not the least of which would be just a basic kind of BBC news network that is neutral, but it provides real information as opposed to propaganda for the Republican Party. And, the Republicans, as you say, have captured the debate. A small group of radicals have captured the Republican Party and captured the national agenda. There's nothing happening much on the left. And in fact, if anything happens on the left, it's going to be probably a primary challenge to Obama, which is going to damage him further and make it more easier for the Republicans to take the next. They're in a good shape to take the Senate, just numerically, but they could take back the White House and have the whole trifecta. And if you had a Perry in the White House, the entire country would become a right-to-work state, wouldn't it? I mean, isn't that... That's the part of it I'd like to ask.
It's easy to talk. It's not so easy to govern.
Right, but the damage would be done if he gets elected, won't it? Or if all of these guys get elected.
I'm not supporting any of the yahoos that are running, but I don't think the average worker thinks it's going to get much worse. And I think it's very difficult to implement a right-wing agenda without taking the economy into a death spiral. So I think they're going to have some real problems in governing if they stick to their fantasy ideology. I mean, look, if you have a fantasy conception of what happened to the U.S. economy and where it ought to go, you're gonna make some enormous mistakes. The problem is that just happened with Bush, and you talk about the media, and I agree with you completely. But you know what? President Obama gets all the media he wants. He had something to say. If he actually said, "Look, I'm going to concentrate on unemployment, and I'm really not going to concentrate on Wall Street. They're not my priority." Had he told his advisors, "I don't want to hear that. I'm going to get on TV and say we got to put America back to work. I'm going to say it 1,000 times." Then the media would have to listen to him. But he gave the debate to the Republicans. He handed it over to them on a silver platter. First, with his very compromised health care plan. Second, with his incredible faith that his pro-Wall Street advisors, people made millions on, or lived with the people that made millions on, Wall Street, were going to bail him out of this crisis. And then and then turning over the debate entirely to the Republicans, agreeing with them that the debt crisis was the problem, and turning the whole country's focus that way, he dug himself a hole. It'll take, maybe he is a political Houdini and get himself out of it, but I'm very disappointed with his failure to do just what you said, which is public education. If all the public's getting is kind of right-wing media, it's a disaster. But the president has the power. He can do the bully pulpit. That's the one thing he has that's unadulterated, that nobody can stop him. He just has to call a press conference and start talking. And when the other side attacks, he talks some more. You know, someone pointed out that, the fire in the belly that FDR had, his, vehement distrust and dislike of the financial establishment was so palpable. American people trust them. You know what? Obama doesn't have that, not because he's a bad person, but he really doesn't think that's the real problem. And that's the astounding part. And labor has not found a way to get his attention.
Let me ask you again. I'm speaking with Leslie Appold, a labor educator who's brought together, worked on the Blue-Green Alliance, which involves unions and environmental organizations such as the United Steelworkers Union and the Sierra Club. The president, of course, has already inflamed labor by, or at least the Democratic Party and the Democratic establishment, by choosing North Carolina for their next convention. And apparently there are virtually no union hotels down there, which has infuriated the AFL-CIO. Is that an indication that the Democratic Party, because labor unions don't have the money they used to have and the influence they used to have, is simply going to where the money is, which is...
No, actually, I think labor still has quite a bit of money. That's not the issue. The issue is they got nobody else to give it to. So the Democrats can push them as far to the right as they want to, and labor will not say anything. Now, if they held a counter convention or didn't, or showed, chose not to show up, they might get their attention. But they're unwilling to. I guess they've gotten to the. I've never been able to figure this out. But they want to be an insider. They cherish their access to the White House, to to staff, et cetera, et cetera. And they just, even when the whole thing is flying to the right, they just can't stop and do anything bold enough to get their attention, because they're afraid they'll be cut off. There were, I was involved in education around the healthcare bill, and during one of the pieces of education that we developed with the Communication Workers of America was the difference between McCain's position and Obama's position on taxing healthcare benefits. Now, the Communication Workers of America have a very good healthcare plan compared to the rest of us, something they fought for over 40 years. Piece by piece by piece, and to tax it would be like a huge wage cut for them. Obama said he wouldn't tax them, and McCain said he would. And as soon as Obama got in, he agreed on a compromise to tax them. Now, not all at once; it takes some time, et cetera, et cetera. But he caved on that issue, and labor wouldn't. They negotiated with him, but they couldn't get him to back off of that. Now, had they said, okay, guess what, we're going to submarine the entire healthcare bill, screw you, they would have got his attention. But they don't want to do that kind of stuff. Look, he's a nice guy. He's incredibly smart. I'm sure, he's an incredibly decent person. But he's not progressive. He feels most comfortable in the middle of the road. And that middle of the road is shifting quickly to the right, and Obama's going right along with it. And labor's not stopping them. And that's the Labor Day message is obviously we need many more Wisconsins. We need much more defiant leadership. We need labor spokespeople that are going to organize this kind of charge. And somehow people smarter than me are going to have to figure out a political strategy that makes some sense to the rank and file, because we're losing them. They're going to vote, are going to sit home, or they're going to vote for Republicans, because we're not giving them anything to vote for in most districts around the country.
Well, just in closing, Leslie Apold, that, of course, is the key to the Republicans. They never get elected unless they get Democrats to vote for them. That is the
amazing, isn't it?
That's the so-called Reagan-Democrat phenomenon. So what is it, just in closing, what is it about that appeal that Rick Perry, he may be a Yahoo, but, you know, all the South is a right-to-work state. Working people down there seem to drink that Kool-Aid, that it's okay not to have a union. You know, that's a plantation mentality, whatever it is. I'm mystified by it. Can you explain to me?
I think it all has to do with employment. Whoever delivers the job is going to get elected. And he has a narrative that says, Texas is a booming economy unlike the rest of the country. Follow me. And unless Obama upends that, which is going to be hard to do when you have 29 million unemployed and underemployed around the country, it's going to be very difficult for them to do it. But that's what's giving him his strength. Get rid of unions, cut back social spending, get rid of the whole New Deal. He wants to go all the way back to 1900, to the Gilded Age, and let the industrialists and the entrepreneurs put America back to work. That's his story. And really what we're having now is this great, you know, ideological battle. And people go for that if it produces jobs. Because the only way to survive in our society is you got to have work. You know, unless you got a trust fund, you got to have work. So that's incredibly appealing. And look, how long has it been? When's the last time you heard a Democrat really talk about jobs and employment? I mean, really talk about it in a way that speaks to the average working person. Yeah, there's some good congresspeople around the country that still do that. But, you know, people are pretty gun-shy in the Democratic Party, getting too friendly with working people. So the other side, the Reagan Democrat, sounds like he's going to be more successful. Reagan put people back to work. We had a boom under Bush. Yeah, got a little out of hand at the end. We got a near depression under Obama. It's Obama's depression now. Zero Obama, whatever they're going to call him now. Zero jobs Obama. It's a very, very tough situation. So, you know, Perry, it's not that he's a Yahoo. It's that he's got a story to tell. It happens to be a lie, but he has a story to tell. And look, it's been history of the world. It's been you put people to work, either through war or whatever, you can elect anybody, even Adolf Hitler. So, you know, Mussolini, Hitler rose to power when in a dysfunctional society that couldn't put his people back to work.
Well, we have, I'm afraid, ended.
Happy Labor Day.
Exactly. I was about to say, Les.
Sorry about that.
But I do thank you for joining
us. I don't want to BS your listening audience.
No, I get it. And in spite of all that, have a happy Labor Day.
You too. Thank you for having me.
Thanks a lot, Les.
Thank you, Dan.
Again, I've been speaking with Les Leopold, who is a labor educator. He directs two nonprofit educational organizations, the Labor Institute and the Public Health Institute. And he also serves as a strategic consultant to the Blue-Green Alliance, which brings together trade unions and environmental organizations such as the United Steelworkers Union and the Sierra Club. He's also the author of The Looting of America, How Wall Street's Game of Fantasy Finance Destroyed Our Jobs, Pensions, and Prosperity, and What We Can Do About It. So we're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back in a moment talking with a labor historian.